The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The drive to go further and reach higher. The same thing that inspires you inspires us. At Strayer University, we're always searching for new ways to make education more affordable. That's why we offer access to up to 10 no-cost gen ed courses to help you save time and money so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. No-cost gen eds provided by Strayer University affiliates of Via Learning. Eligibility rules apply. Connect with us for details. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
Hey, I'm Zach, and one day I'm going to make movies, but right now I'm young, dumb, and not nearly as good-looking as my co-hosts. So with the help of...
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
I'm Steven.
I'm going to learn what makes a movie great by watching all the classics I've skipped over. So pop the corn and turn your cell phone to silent, because it's time for a new episode of Zach on Film.
You there, listening to this podcast, please pay attention. This is a podcast of the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. This show is Zach on Film. You can't hear Zach right now because this is a silent picture with synced sound effects. Your show will begin in 3 seconds.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Zach on Film this week. What's up, Steven?
Hey, Zach. How are you?
I'm doing just fine.
So you've had a couple of weeks. We had a week off.
Yes.
You've had plenty of time to watch the entirety of the Charlie Chaplin classic film Modern Times.
You could say that.
I did that same thing when I was, I think I was like 19 or 20, and I was going to a party that was 21 and over.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, are you 21? I'm like, yeah, if you say so. And they're like, are you sure you're 21? Yeah, you said so. So, okay.
Yeah.
Did you watch the entirety of this film? Sure, if you say so.
Yeah. The question should be, was my intent to watch the entirety of this film? In which I would answer, yes. Did Apple's 24-hour rental policy stop me from watching the last 11 minutes of this film? I would again answer yes.
But you got the general idea of...
Yeah.
Did your research? You watched the
I watched the singing that I missed.
Okay. It's all up on YouTube.
Yeah.
So Modern Times, what is this about?
Modern Times is a Charlie Chaplin movie,
mm-hmm,
starring this character who is quite famous, who I forget his name.
Charlie Chaplin?
No.
The little tramp?
The little tramp. Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess that's what they call him. So it's about him and getting a job and being a bum and kind of like the economy and stuff.
Okay,
being
so
poor and stuff.
Okay, so this movie comes out in 1934.
Right? Oh, yeah.
It comes out during the age of talking pictures. Talking pictures had already been out for 4 or 5 years.
Right.
I mean,
we
had that with a jazz singer, and everyone knew that it would work. And yet Charlie Chaplin refused to release this movie as a quote-unquote talkie.
Yep.
Which is fascinating, because he did say that the synced sound was okay,
mm-hmm,
but he really thought that his character, the Little Tramp, which audiences around the world had loved, they thought that it would deteriorate the international appeal. Or the universal appeal, I should say.
Right, mm-hmm, if he spoke any English.
If he spoke any kind of English.
Sure.
Or any kind of language.
That's because, understandable.
You know, if you're in France and you see this little guy up there wiggling his mustache and doing his cane bit and doing the pratfalls, you think French. I mean, you kind of think about the artist. Remember the movie that we talked about not too long ago,
mm-hmm,
where your mind is totally blown at the end because all this time, in your mind, this actor speaks English. He's an American, right? And so I think that that was kind of a wise choice on Chaplin's part.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if and Rodrigo, jump in and tell me if I'm diving too deep here. The title of this movie is Modern Times, and dealing with modern technology.
Right.
And here is a character that for the longest time is Industrial Revolution type character, moving into a modern time where we have electricity and where we have motion pictures and where we have all of these things. And so he remains silent. And for the majority of the picture, except for the singing number, all of the sound effects come from technology, right? The turbines make noise. Mm-hmm. The record player, instead of having a guy come in and explain how this mobile food machine works, they're having a record player say, this man is John Smith. He has invented, you know, all of these kinds of things. And even when we hear the owner of the factory talking, he's not talking face-to-face with any character. He's talking over a projected television device, right?
Right.
So one could argue that this is a great balance in showing that all the sound in this talking picture is mechanical sound and not real sound.
Right.
And that may be what the point of the Little Tramp is here's somebody who's having to evolve, and the way Charlie Chaplin decides to show that this evolution is by keeping all the characters silent, but having the technology bring us forward in the story. Did you get that at all, Zach?
No, I did not delve into what it meant by
the
certain things. Yeah, the themes of certain things only having sound.
Yeah, go back and watch it again. Oh, I'm sorry, your rental expired. But when you get a chance, go back and try to watch it again and notice that there are a few times where it doesn't, where that kind of falls apart. The biggest one is the singing number at the end.
Yeah.
But going back to the fact that the tramp is a silent character, his song, the gibberish song, are not real words. I mean, it's just gibberish that Charlie Chaplin is spouting out to great success. So even in the fact that we hear Charlie Chaplin's voice, we still don't understand it. We still don't comprehend
what
we get in this
And
piece.
It still makes that universal appeal, like you said, of the character where it doesn't... He's not from anywhere now. He's just a normal character.
Right. You made a good observation about our opening shot of this film and how that leads into the rest of the
I mean, I started the film and there's just a really quick... And it's probably 3 seconds or less shot of just a group of sheep being led into a pen or a slaughterhouse, or you don't really see, but, and then there's one black sheep in the middle, and it's super quick, and then it fades into shots of people coming off the subway, I think.
Or the factory.
Or someone
getting
on the factory or something, or pretty much just, you kind of just see the meld of the sheep and the humans, like, are the same thing in there, but it never comes back again. It's just really quick at the beginning, and then it kind of just plays out. And so, I think there's one black sheep in there, which I think we can... associate to be the tramp throughout the film, because he stands out amongst everyone else at the factory. He's kind of loopy and crazy and does weird things. But then I thought, because when you think and you analyze the film about what it's trying to say about the modernization and industry and stuff, does that, I mean, that shot led me, and you kind of start analyzing it through the movie through that shot. So if you take out that beginning shot of sheep and the black sheep, and you just go straight into people bustling into a factory, does the theme of the movie kind of dissipate, or is it still, you think, have the same tone?
No, I think it absolutely does. I think that, even though he's like a little weird guy, I think we're meant to identify with the little tramp. Mm-hmm. I think what he was saying is, in this modern hustle and bustle world, this is what we're all doing. We're all just trying to keep up.
Yeah, and we are sheep ourselves.
Right.
One could argue, coming out in 1934, we're starting in the Great Depression, middle of the Great Depression, and people are doing anything they can and are willing to do anything they can so that they can keep their factory jobs. So we see Charlie Chaplin on the assembly line, just ratcheting it away, even though the owner is like, increase it 20%, increase it 50%, and everybody on the line is just, you know, sweating and doing anything they can because they want to keep that job. And Chaplin is the one that ends up breaking in this piece and gets caught up in, literally gets caught up in the machinery of the modern times. I think you're right, Rodrigo, in one sense that the without the sheep allegory at the beginning, it still would hold up, but I think it kind of is reemphasized or hits home even harder, saying we are all just these sheep being led to the slaughter. All of us, you know, what are we doing with ourselves?
Yeah. And I mean, industrialization, one of the big themes of authors and filmmakers and people that kind of have an anti-industrialization look or people who are leery of it is that loss of individuality. It's that idea that the little guy gets forgotten, like the individual gets forgotten so that everybody can kind of have, like, instead of some people having a good life and some people having a bad life, everybody just kind of has a generally mediocre life.
Right.
You know, that assembly line scene.
Yeah.
It's a great gag.
Right? Oh, I mean, yeah.
He's just
sure.
constantly trying yeah. to keep up and look and see where that's played out 100 times before. The I Love Lucy gag. In fact, there's some show on the Disney Channel. Some
and
kids,
by before, he means after.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Kind of, yeah, mm-hmm. came after. But before us.
Right.
But before
sure.
Zach.
Yeah.
So I Love Lucy mm-hmm. has done the same thing. There's a TV show, some kid show on the Disney Channel, where they're going and making pizzas off an assembly line, and they're doing the exact
sure,
same
sure.
gag.
Assembly line gag.
Again, yep. again and again and again and again. So there's a lot of, when you talk about evolution of comedy, or maybe you're going to talk about it, we start to see some of these things, mm-hmm, including mm-hmm. Charlie Chaplin roller skating around and getting very close to the edge and falling.
Oh, yeah.
We see those kinds of gags come up a lot in other comedies years later.
Yeah. I mean, I think comedy, much like any art, gets recycled, and you see things of the past regenerate and come back around and around and around and again, because I think, I mean, there's this part of human nature that things are funny. I mean, as mean it is someone falling down is funny.
Oh, sure.
I don't, like, why?
You're
it's
just
horrible.
Sick and wrong,
sure,
Zach.
Sure, no, I agree.
Somebody could get hurt.
I agree. But that's funny, and so I think a lot of comedies in this area, I know we watched, was it like Duck Soup and stuff, and mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and this, I mean, they hit home to, I think, what humans kind of find funny, and then, I mean,
other
we kind of we just keep going. Well, yeah, sure, sure.
So let me ask you, did you find this movie funny? I mean, I watched it with Rodrigo,
yeah,
but I can't trust his judgment because he was high on the goofballs at the time.
Yeah.
And his laughter may have been clouded by that by that sick devil Percocet.
Yep.
Yeah. No, this movie I thought was absolutely hilarious. I laughed the entire time. It was so funny.
Well, what made it funny? Where's the humor? I mean, here's a guy who has a mental breakdown,
yeah.
gets thrown in an institution, comes out, gets caught up in a riot, and people think that he is the leader of the local communist party,
sure.
gets thrown into
normal
jail,
uh-huh.
Stops a jailbreak,
yes.
realizes that he can't cope in the real world, and is trying to do everything in his power to get back into jail so he can lead the comfortable life.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, he runs into this young girl, weirdness that we have to talk about there, and they fall yeah. in love with each other, and they live in a shack down by the river.
Yeah.
While they're being pursued by police.
Sure. Yeah, that's all funny. I think a couple of the gags, it's like the assembly line stuff, and the when he's walking around the dance floor with that plate of food over his head.
Right, right, right.
Is that stretching out mm-hmm. of funny, where it's kind of funny the first time, and then just keeps happening over and right, over right. again, and it just keeps getting funnier. As I think that's part of it, and just physical humor, I don't think gets used as much anymore. Maybe that's
it doesn't have the same clout. Definitely.
Sure, sure.
We were talking earlier about just before recording, we were talking about a funny story about Jim Carrey.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Carrey is somebody that does a lot of physical pratfall
yeah.
comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Who else is somebody more recent that we see doing? I mean, Dick Van Dyke does the
sure, sure.
trip and fall
yeah.
over the couch.
Chris Farley did a lot of stuff.
Chris Farley right. does some of that, or did some of that. Why is that something that still holds up today? That was one of the questions that you had pondered. Would
yeah.
Charlie Chaplin today be as funny as he was back then?
And I don't know. It's hard for me to say. I don't know if he would, knowing the movies that I've gone to see recently that are funny. I mean, humor movies I saw this last summer were Bad Grandpa.
Right.
With the Jackass guys.
Right.
Mm-hmm. This is the End with Seth Rogen and his friends.
Mm-hmm.
And The Heat with Sandra Bullock and right. Melissa McCartney.
Right.
And those movies, I don't feel like are that similar to modern times at all. I guess maybe
I was going to say Jackass is probably the closest that we have
yeah.
to the physical
oh, yeah.
comedy
yeah.
type stuff. And Jim Carrey with the stuff that he does in Ace Ventura.
Yeah.
And those kinds of films. But I wonder, though, there's a lot of sophistication in what Charlie Chaplin is doing. And yes. I think you may have a even greater appreciation of Charlie Chaplin if you've seen things like City Lights or The Kid.
Uh-huh.
What's the one that's the where he goes up north and he has to eat a shoe?
I do not know.
I'll have to look it up here in a second. But there's a lot of sophistication going on underneath the comedy and humor. But you watch something like Dumb and Dumber or Dumberer or whatever the Dumb 2, whatever the sequel is going to be.
Don't watch that one.
And you're like, this is not... I mean, there's no sophistication in that kind of a film.
And that's the thing is, back before there were talkies, the only game in town was that sort of physical humor.
Sure.
And so they had to be really good at it. And it had to be really well done. And there had to be something to it. Nowadays, mm-hmm. the physical humor is almost an excuse not to have to write a scene.
Yeah.
To a certain degree, as like, funny things happen. Okay, then the movie continues.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think you're right about the sophistication of it. Because, I mean, if we look at the real physical humor of the day, I think Jackass is that. But that's like a totally non-sophisticated,
right.
going as far as we possibly can and hurting ourselves in the weirdest ways and doing the eating weird stuff. Mm-hmm. It is like the evolution of physical comedy to a point where we can't do that kind of comedy anymore, because I think people would just say, oh, you're trying to ape this guy, or it just seems too old.
I'm sure our listeners could probably come up with some good examples. I mean, you know, again, the only time that I can think about a Peter Sellers in the Pink Panther movies is probably pretty close.
Here's something to think about. Almost every animated movie will have some sort of like hilarious scene where people are getting hit over the head with boards and pans and stuff like that. I mean, you went to see Frozen recently. Did it have a scene?
There's a lot of
where a hilarious side character
kicked to the head, slapstick falling down, those kinds of things. Yes,
I mean that kind of humor is alive and well in cartoons, in children's programming.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And like I mentioned earlier, the assembly line gag is on some recent Disney television show
where
the brother sister are trying to.
I saw an assembly line gag in My Little Pony.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Wow. The movie I'm thinking of, Gold Rush. They go north to Alaska or the Klondike to cash in on the gold, and didn't do so well, has to eat his shoes. Great comedy routine. Keep going with what you had coming up next.
It's
a technical. It's a technical thing. This is what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Originally, silent films were shot at 18 frames a second.
Yeah.
Or 24 frames a second played back at 18 frames a second.
Okay.
And so that's where a lot of times when we see old pictures, it looks like people are just running super, super fast.
Yeah.
If you've seen Keystone Cop kind of stuff.
They're like jittery.
Yeah, they're kind of jittery and they move really, really, really faster than normal. When this movie originally released, they played it back at the 24 frames a second, shot at 18. And so it does look very quick.
Yeah.
And so that heightened a lot of the comedy. The versions that we watched, or the version we watched on iTunes, has fixed that to where it's not sped up humor. So what the sped up action. Mm-hmm. So what you're seeing is the real chase, the real everything that's going on as it was filmed.
There was one part that I wanted to bring up that I thought when him and the girl are sitting on the grass and they daydream about their house.
Right.
Right before that couple walks out of the house making them think of it.
Right.
And I thought they looked really weird in the way they moved. I don't know if it was, I couldn't tell if the film was being sped up because they looked fine, but it seemed like they were like really jittery. I didn't know if it was.
Maybe it was a result of modern time.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was like
bad actors.
Well, I mean, that could have been it, or I didn't know if they were trying to say something about people in the area living in these houses and stuff.
I do remember that they were over-exaggerating everything. Like
yeah.
The woman was, well, goodbye, husband, goodbye. Oh, you know, the arms to the chest. Oh, and twirling around and running back into the house like, oh, I can't wait to... It was a really terrible scene.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So then you had another theme or idea that popped up in this as you were watching it that you wanted to talk about.
Nose powder.
Oh,
yeah.
Nose powder.
That was a very funny scene. And
tell us about what happens.
So he's in jail.
Right.
and
trumped up charge, mistaken identity.
Right. So he's in the cafeteria, and they cut away to some cops. They need to find someone that's smuggling in some nose powder, in quotes.
Yes.
And so, oh, I know what they're saying. They're talking about the old white powder, the cocaine.
Right.
And so they cut to a guy next to the tramp, and he pours a lot of white stuff into a salt shaker at the cafeteria. They take the drug fiend away, but he's there and he needs to salt his food. Unfortunately, he just dumps a whole lot of cocaine on his food and he goes bonkers.
Yeah, he goes.
It is unbelievably funny.
Yeah. So this is somewhat controversial. We had talked, I don't know, many, many episodes ago about the Hays Commission and the motion picture rating system that was being developed. One of the things that was in the Hays Code was you do not glamorize, you do not show people using drugs of any kind, especially marijuana and cocaine. And so there was some issue of whether that scene would be left in the movie or not. I guess the out for Chaplin was he had used a gimmick very similar to that with cocaine or nose powder many years before in another one of his films. And people kind of knew that it was the humorous take. And so they allowed that to go through in this piece.
Okay.
But this is right in the middle of this time where you don't do anything that is wrong, suggestive, immoral.
Right.
Also during this time, we start to see the rise of these love stories where good triumphs over evil and everything turns out well in the end. But this was, did bring up some controversy at the time.
Yeah, I assumed it would. And going back to like the assembly line joke that goes on, have you ever seen the movie Corky Romano?
No.
That's
the head shaking in the car thing, right?
Same guy.
Same actor. Okay.
That's Night at the Roxbury.
Oh, right.
Yeah. There is a scene in Corky Romano where he's an undercover agent and a bag of cocaine rips open and it gets all over his face and his eyes go all buggy eyed and everything, just like in this. And then he has to go give a speech to like a classroom of kindergartners and stuff. He just goes insane talking about how we should buy a boat and stuff. And so it's like, immediate thing. I thought of this when this started happening. Like, oh, that's where Corky got it.
Yeah. I mean, you see a lot of these stuff and to a certain degree, you know, the assembly line stuff probably was pretty new. It was a pretty good new joke at the time, but some of this other stuff, even for Chaplin, it isn't. I mean, some of this stuff has been around since vaudeville or before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially going back to vaudeville. There's a great scene in it, maybe in The Kid or maybe in Gold Rush. I forget which one. But it's the one where he has the two potatoes and he's sitting there, two potatoes on a fork, and he's got his chin resting on the fork and he starts doing this little dance routine. Mm-hmm. That's an old vaudeville number that was put onto this piece. You touched on something, Zach, that I think finally has clicked after all these years of me grousing and griping about kids these days don't have an appreciation for the things that they're seeing because they don't know where it came from. Mm-hmm. And I just heard you, Zach, say, now I know where it came from. I knew instantly where this was borrowed from. So congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Also, it's midnight and it's Zach's birthday, so he doesn't count as a kid anymore.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So
I kind of wish
you can still complain about kids these days.
Yeah.
I kind of wish you had watched The Kid. You had picked The Kid instead of Modern Times or City Lights instead of Modern Times, because technically this one is a talkie as opposed to a true silent film.
Yeah.
And I think if you watch The Kid, and you probably should, because you'll be crying at the end. Because it's sad.
Aww.
It's really sad.
I'll spoil
it for you. It's about the tramp hooking up with an orphan urchin kid on the street, and they form a very unique bond. And at the end,
oh, not really hooking up.
No. Like they're
like hanging
like
out.
They're buddies.
They're buddies.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
He becomes the kid's father in a sense, and they do everything together. And it's a real father son story. And then at the end, the cops show up and say, "I'm sorry, this kid's an orphan. He's got to go to the orphanage." And they're just yanking the kid out of Charlie Chaplin's hands and throwing him back in the bus with all the other orphan kids, and the kid's just crying his eyes out and screaming, and Charlie Chaplin's crying because it's really a sad moment. He can't do anything about it.
Was he an orphan, Charlie Chaplin, in real life?
I don't know.
Because that was a thing that came up in this Modern Times when the Social Security takes away the two girls away from the street lady that we follow out through the whole movie. So, I mean, talking about
his
that.
Parents,
it seems like
it talks
of...
about here that his parents were music hall entertainers. His mom was the daughter of a shoemaker, so they were around in his time. And you have to think that Charlie Chaplin got into vaudeville. I mean, his career spans 75 years from a very young child in vaudeville all the way to there's I think two more movies after this. The Dictator is probably the next biggest one that people are going to remember him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was his last movie before his death. Mm-hmm. And so all this time of being in entertainment and show business and
career.
Seeing it evolve from the stage to the silence to a big to-do to the mm-hmm. point where, and if you want to watch some good Charlie Chaplin, I mean, all this stuff is really good. The Dictator is another one where he totally satirizes without saying Hitler, mm-hmm. without naming Hitler, he totally satirizes Hitler and the Nazi Party and ended up on Hitler's death list.
Oh, gosh. Yeah,
it was
I mean,
Charlie Chaplin, the Three Stooges.
Yeah, if you think about the time period, this is topical comedy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's a whole thing. I mean, they don't use the swastika, but they use motifs and costume design mm-hmm. and schemes that are very reflective of the Nazi Party. And there's this whole thing where the dictator, Hitler, mm-hmm. Is playing around with the world as a giant balloon. And just you can tell that this dance number is all about him, his desire to take over the world. Mm-hmm. Very satirical, makes fun of Hitler, you know, which is another thing. When you want to, this is brought up on another couple of podcasts. When you want to make somebody evil, you draw the little Hitler mustache on him.
Yeah.
And yet Charlie Chaplin, you look at him and you're like, well, there's nothing wrong with Charlie Chaplin with the little Hitler mustache.
I would say, he came in before the thing and I don't know. It's ruined forever.
That style was very popular
well, yeah,
at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know how truthful
Michael Jordan does it again.
Well, I think Michael Jordan's trying to have like it comes down from his nose and over his lip, but mm-hmm. you can't see it over his lip.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah. I don't know how truthful the Chaplin movie is, his biopic. Mm-hmm. I think
Johnny Depp. Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, Robert Downey Jr., that's what it is. Where somebody's asking him what he thinks of Hitler, and he gives him this, like, kind of hilarious response, and he's like, and also he stole my mustache.
That's why Hitler didn't like it. Yeah, have you not seen the Charlie Chaplin biopic with uh-uh. Robert Downey Jr.?
No.
This came out in, man, I want to say like 90s, sometime early 90s.
Oh, wow.
Go check it out. It's really good. Oh, wow. It's a real good biography. Shows the ups and downs. I mean, Charlie Chaplin's life is, if you want to talk about how a true independent filmmaker, I mean, at one point mm-hmm. he and Mary Pickford and... Crap, who was it? They went off and formed their own
United Artists
Pictures, which is still around today. And they're just like, screw you.
I don't know that it's still
studios.
Around today. I think it might have
Oh, did
finally,
it go out?
Yeah,
finally gave up the ghost?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I know they said that he was like a perfectionist. And since they had his own studio, he didn't really care about budget as much. Mm-hmm. And so he would just take as long as he wanted to make his movies.
Oh, yeah,
so
there are some. Just... There's a story in it.
Well, and that was the idea behind United Artists, is uh-huh. to lure basically filmmakers... Rather than to churning out pictures to make money.
Yeah, right. Douglas Fairbanks, Mary Pickford.
Right.
But yeah, it was just, hey, all the time you want. And the studio system will pay us instead of us working for the man.
Yeah.
You know how it is, Zach, working for the man.
I know it every day.
Yep. Are you one
every
of those blind sheep?
Probably.
Blindly led to the slaughter. One day Zach will go crazy and get caught up in a giant, like,
yep.
DVR.
Well, you should look for that to happen soon.
Yep. Now, one thing about that is good about this specific movie is that it's very transitional in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Not just that it has silent parts and also parts where there's actual speech, but also kind of in some of its techniques. For example, there's a lot of kind of vaudeville-esque slapstick stuff,
mm-hmm.
but also they use a lot of camera cuts. If you look at something like Duck Soup, you'll just have like the scene, like a wide shot or something like that, and there'll be very few cuts while they're doing their routine.
Right.
In this one, you know, they get sucked into the machine, and they'll cut to a different part of the machine where you see the guy like...
Yeah, get
wound down. So they're actually using all these film techniques kind of to enhance the theater techniques.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So I found that pretty interesting. Then again, like Steven said, I was tripping out, so that might not have happened at all.
and so people aren't worried that Rodrigo has a problem that we need to get him into Betty Ford about. he had just had his wisdom teeth taken out that morning.
Yep.
And was on some painkillers. And we, while I was waiting so he wouldn't choke on his own vomit, I said, hey, how about we watch this? And so we sat and laughed and watched.
I was like, ah. And Steven's like, that's just the thing on iTunes. I haven't started yet. That Charlie guy, he kills me. Steven, you're my best friend.
Okay. So I have a question.
I might have an answer.
And you guys can ponder this, because it does somewhat, I mean, it disturbs me, not disturbs me. I guess I don't have a problem when there's huge age gaps between romance, right? I mean, you know, 70-year-old dating a 40-year-old, or a 40-year-old dating a 20-year-old. But here we have Charlie Chaplin, the tramp, undetermined age, dating or with this waif girl who was still living at home with her father and her two younger sisters after the mother had died. Paulette Goddard, really a beautiful woman.
Yeah, gorgeous.
I'm trying to figure out what her age was. She was born in 1910. This movie came out in 34. So she would have been in her 20s in this role. But does she come off a lot younger in this piece? Because for some reason I kept thinking, man, she's like 16 and Charlie Chaplin's like the tramp is doing inappropriate things with a 16-year-old in this film.
Well, that's an interesting question, because let's say for a second that she did look 16.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the age of consent back then.
It may have been, yeah.
So even then, for the time, it's not inappropriate. You can consider it inappropriate now, certainly. But I don't know. I got the sense that she was kind of just a weird girl.
Yeah.
And acted like somewhat youthful, but was also like taking care of her sisters and her dad.
But you know, she's an orphan, and the whole point why the police are after her is because they're wanting to haul her off to the orphanage.
That's right. Right.
And
you
think if
true.
16 was the age of consent, why would they be so concerned about hauling her off to the orphanage?
Well, because she still wasn't an adult. See, the back in the day, those two things weren't the same thing.
What?
In fact, there's some states where 16 is still the age of consent.
Yeah, and sometimes younger.
I
don't know. She's of legal age here. It just at times seemed a little, little bit too creepy.
Yeah, I could say you say that.
But again, maybe back then it was very common. People were like, oh, yeah, you know, 16-year-old Susie down the street.
I mean, but the tramp doesn't look really that old in the film, really.
Right. You also have to consider that he dresses in like a top hat and a coat.
right.
But that's how everybody dressed
sure,
back then.
Sure.
Or not a top hat, but like a little bowler
hat.
Yeah,
his was more comical than everyone else. Like,
he was born in 1889. So do the math. So add 11 years plus 36. So he would have been,
oh wow,
you know, 50.
Yeah, wow.
Pushing 50, 47.
I wouldn't have thought that he was that old in that movie.
Nope. He did not die until 1977.
It's like 90 years, something
yeah,
like that.
88 years. So
wow.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, she died in like 1990.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
There you go.
So she lived a pretty long life, too. 1910 to 1990, 80
Fantastic.
Years.
Yeah, 80 years,
yeah. So. Look at those people.
All right. What else did you come up with, Zach?
Oh. I really thought the digital screen, yeah.
What's that?
That was a weird noise.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I really thought the digital screens were interesting. I mean, because we're talking about a 1930s movie.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you know, it's totally going to make sense. Put a television like screen in the middle of a machine, I have a security system with a giant like 80-inch projector in my office.
So
it's like the future,
watching, yeah, kind of like today, right?
Yeah.
That's something that I found a little jarring, because the movie starts out in this factory pretty much, and the machines are very stylized,
Art Deco,
stylized. There's all these screens all over the place where like the boss can look at you and stuff and things like that, and there's like electricity and everything going on. But then when they leave the factory, everything looks normal,
right?
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the factory is the future. The factory is where people want to get their jobs. I mean,
honestly,
you think about what's going on before, we're an agricultural society with the Industrial Revolution taking over. That's modernism. The factory is the future. Farm and city and department stores are kind of this staple, this past thing, this old thing. So I think, and again, I still think that may be part of the reason why there's such a stark contrast between the two.
I think the main reason is that they blew the budget on the Art Deco machines.
It reminds me a lot of Metropolis, right? I mean, have you seen Metropolis?
Oh, you're talking about, yeah.
The silent film Metropolis?
I know what you're talking about. I think I've seen like 10 minutes of it on Netflix before.
That's probably about all you need to see.
Oh.
It's pretty crazy if you ever watch that in full.
Isn't it like all miniatures and stuff?
Oh, yeah. The special effects that they do. And if we wanted to just talk about the evolution of special effects, we could start and spend an entire hour just talking about Metropolis and how in some shots to make things, to get a greater depth of field and make them look like the sets are larger than they are, they're actually shooting into a mirror with the set behind them so that they have even greater distance between the film plane and the miniature. Because when you shoot through a mirror, you don't have just the distance to the mirror. You also have the distance from the mirror back to the subject that you're shooting for. So you could create these great depth and these cool things that they were doing with mirrors and with fades and just with everything. It's really, really fascinating if you do an in-depth analysis of that.
When you said Metropolis, for some reason I thought Gotham, and I thought you were talking about the Tim Burton Batman movie.
Which also uses a lot of Gothic art.
But then I figured out what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But really, those machines in that factory, not efficient at all. No one should be able to slide through your gears.
No.
It's like, those gears aren't doing anything. They're specifically designed for a human to slide through them. It doesn't make any sense.
Doing his own stunts, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. That sliding through the gear scene was just like, from a set thing, was just awesome.
Yeah.
Think they could do that today?
Oh, yeah.
And make it work and make it believable?
Yes, I think they could, but it would be different. Today's audiences, you need to make different allowances for them.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't just build that exact same set and play it that way and do it that way, but you could do something similar.
You see a lot of the people about to be caught up in the gears of some giant machine at the end of movies. We see that a lot in cartoons a lot too. Mm-hmm. So
I mean, the whole, like, there's like a 10-minute scene in, I want to say, Attack of the Clones. Where they're just like running around
on the conveyor belts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Genosha.
Yep.
Yep.
Got some associate producers to thank this week,
Zach.
Oh,
yuck. Yeah. Oh, yuck. Yes, we do. Yuck. Yes, we do.
The one drinking.
Our associate producers, Matthew Floyd, Jason Foreman, Hunter Graham, Joshua Keller, Zachariah McAllister, Mark Burback, Michael Bowen, Melanie Nazelrod, Tress Taylor, and Michelle Rettner. Thank you for being associate producers on Zach on Film.
What makes this film then culturally, historically significant?
That it's really funny.
Well, beyond that, to be a reason they want to preserve this film and say that this is one of the greatest films ever made, and we have to do everything in our power to protect this film.
Well, I mean, we looked at the artist, and the artist got really good reviews, like won the Academy Award for Best Picture. And it was a film in the modern era, looking back and stylizing a style of film that's long dead. I mean, people don't make silent films anymore, really. So, Charlie Chaplin kind of did that in a sense, in that the things have been changing. People are talking in movies now, but he said, we don't need to. Like, we don't have to advance to still make good films. There's no reason, we don't have to, like today, we don't have to make everything CGI. We don't have to. Mm-hmm. Not everything has to be a special effect. We can still do practical things. Mm-hmm. And so I think, I mean, that's a part of it, that he recognized that sound does have an importance in film, because, I mean, he still syncs sound with a lot of things, but it doesn't have to be done that way. Film doesn't have to be made a certain way. You don't have to keep up with the times. You can still look back to where you started and just make a film like that.
Okay. Is that a good, reasonable?
I think so. Honestly, I think that at the dawn of the Industrial Revolution, there was this anxiety that appeared in humans because city living is fundamentally different, and working in an industrialized situation is fundamentally different from what we were doing before. And I think that when you watch this movie, there's something that's resonant about it. There's something that's still true today because technology keeps moving forward. Technology keeps changing. You know, nowadays, you know, we're talking about robots delivering your groceries for you,
right?
Which seems crazy,
right?
But just like back then, having a boss that appeared on a TV screen to yell at you seemed crazy, but happens today.
Right, right. Or having an automated robot feeding you food.
Right, right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's the same, like, I think the reason why this movie is worth preserving, and I think some of the rationale behind that, is that even though it was made way back then, it's still very, very resonant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, look, the economy is bad. The economy is going to be bad again.
Right, right.
You know, as we're seeing right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you walk into this movie thinking, like, if somebody somehow managed to trick you into saying, that's not actually Charlie Chaplin.
that's Bruce Willis.
That's somebody, like, doing a good Chaplin impression. This movie was done last year.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you think about it. You might just be like, oh, yeah, yeah, they're talking about, like, the economy being bad and how people can't find jobs and, like, factories being unsafe and stuff like that. I mean,
how
that
the
stuff still goes, yeah.
Got accused of being the leader of the 1% movement.
Right, exactly. Sure. Well, you know, they're talking about, like, a communist.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, a bunch of communists, which people sharing are still tense about today.
Yeah. I think that another reason why it's considered to be preserved is this a very good story. It's got some great, for at the time, very original comedy that still holds up today.
Yep.
I think if you went back and looked at some other silent era movies, I mean, even Harold Lloyd, a lot of his films, which are really good, I don't think, when you compare the two, they're both very good physical comedians.
Mm-hmm.
But, oh, man, they are totally night and day. I mean, if you said, which one would you rather keep, Charlie Chaplin or Harold Lloyd, see a Harold. See a speckled guy. So each of them have some shining moments, but I think we do have some examples of great storytelling, great visuals tied together in a very unique way. And so I think that's why it still holds up today and why people want to preserve it and why you should watch it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm glad you did watch it.
I know you're talking about showing it to people today. Roger Ebert wrote a review. They re-released it. Charlie Chaplin went through this thing. He wanted to re-release all of his movies, and so they started playing Modern Times in theaters. And he said in Chicago, this is in the '70s. It sold out like four nights in a row. And he said everyone just thought it was hilarious, and then like all clapped at the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's 40 years after the movie was made,
right.
And still resonating with people. I think it might still get a similar reaction today.
I think it would get a very similar reaction today.
Yeah, I mean, if you watch The General. Yet?
Nope.
I think you've watched parts of it in one of my classes.
Possibly.
That is a Buster Keaton movie where he's going after the little engine, the train during the Civil War. It's the one where the house falls down and the right around him. You listen to Critical Hit, we actually tried to do that gag one time.
It's not ringing any bells. The house falling down thing sounds familiar.
Okay.
It's right. Been done a lot since.
Okay, that's true. I was saying maybe I'm just thinking of anything movie.
Yeah. Now The General has some like amazing scenes.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And there's a scene where he's like sitting in front of an engine and there's a log like blocking the track. He's got another one and he like throws it and bumps the other one off the track.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, this is all happening. There's no special effects here.
Yeah, they blow up a bridge and have a real train crash down into the river.
What the heck?
It's great. If you haven't seen The General, go watch The General. I mean, there are a number. I mean, this is probably as close to the silent film as we're going to get unless we really dive deep. Well, I don't know what's on the list.
We did Birth of a Nation,
but I mean, really getting into some of these. And Birth of the Nation just there for the sheer spectacle of it. But when you go in and look and see Lloyd and Keaton and Chaplin and even Laurel and Hardy with what they're doing, all the physical comedy, there are no stuntmen.
Right.
They are doing it themselves, putting themselves at great risk.
That scene where he's like skating.
Yes.
In the mall.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like,
I kept looking to go, is that a matte painting?
I was thinking the same thing.
But no, I mean, you look at, I'm not sure that they just literally put him in that much danger. Maybe they did.
Maybe there's
it might have been cushioned below that, but that, I think that's a hole.
I think that's actually
a hole.
Down the banister, down off the
edge. And he just does that whole scene, and it's like, it's always amazing to see like when you get to this thing and you expect that there's going to be this like cut to a mannequin or that you're like, oh, they're building up this thing and it's not actually going to happen. And then it actually happens.
I mean,
he's just doing all these crazy physical things. And it's actually kind of the same thing with this little song and dance number. It's like when it starts and he starts dancing, you're like, how's he moving like that? At least I was. I was like, his feet are pointing in the wrong direction and he's like moving like randomly.
Yeah, it's really amazing. I mean, just the physical. Go watch the General.
Okay.
Go and watch the hell's the Harold Lloyd one that I just watched with my son not too long ago.
About the one where he's climbing a clock.
Yeah, so where he's climbing up the clock. Just go watch those, and I think you'll get a big kick out of them, Zach.
It's worth your
time and worth the money to see this good wholesome humor.
Yeah.
Is that Safety Last?
Safety Last, yes. That features nose powder.
Nose powder.
As a big gimmick in the film. I think you'll enjoy those films. I really do.
I really enjoyed this. A whole lot.
Then go back and learn. Go to your local library. I'm sure they have it on DVD that you can rent.
Yay.
I think some of these movies are in the public domain, so you might
even be able to find them on YouTube.
YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of, next week you're out or not out?
Speaking of the public
domain, I'm gonna say probably a 95% chance out.
Okay, so we need to do something different.
Yep.
A lot of people really liked the live commentary of your what the hell's the name?
Unchanandaloo.
Whatever it is. The eye cutting movie.
I forgot how early in the movie that happened.
Oh yeah, it's like
45 seconds.
I think you need to find another very short public domain movie. Maybe there is a short Chaplin or Buster Keaton short subject.
Okay.
That you can do another one of those for next week.
All right. I'll do some digging.
And we'll post them up online. And the way it worked the last time is we've got a camera on Zach and he's just reacting to what he's seeing and talking about it.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you can play the YouTube movie that he's watching and they're kind of in sync with one another. And you just watch it and it plays out really well. It's kind of like bonus tracks. If you don't know what bonus tracks are, these associate producers, these people whose names we were shouting out earlier, they are our gold members, and silver and gold members over at members.majorspoilers.com get access to a monthly bonus tracks where we sit down and provide live commentary to a movie, and you can watch that movie at the same time and hear us discuss it. We've done Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Back to the Future, we've done Dungeons and Dragons, Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. The list is going to go on and on and on as
all
we continue. All the classics. So I think that that might be something for people to check out and maybe get a little taste in what Zach is going to maybe do for us next week if he has time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll dig in then. We'll find something. There'll be something for you fans.
And of course, the associate producers, those gold members, getting their names shouted out in this show or over in the Major Spoilers podcast. So another benefit of helping Major Spoilers out.
Yeah. So I think that's going to do it for this week on Zach on Film. Make sure to head over to majorspoilers.com, where you can find that podcasting posting page, and give your thoughts about Modern Times or some Charlie Chaplin, and what scenes did you like from the movie. While you're at majorspoilers.com, make sure to click on the amazon.com link, where you can do all of your holiday shopping on Amazon. But a little bit of that money will come back to Major Spoilers. Won't cost you any extra, but that little bit will help keep us going week after week, giving you so much free content. So next week, look for something on the site for a little commentary. And after that, we'll be back next sometime with the Zach on Film.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.